He's just reading the scene taken from the book of Daniel, 7th chapter. I'll be reading verses 2 and 3. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other.
Well, good evening, everyone. Good to see each and every one of you. Always thankful for the opportunity we have to worship God in spirit and in truth. And for this month, we've been, in the Sunday evening, been looking at the book of Daniel. And Daniel certainly has so much included in it, I can't hit on everything, and I won't even be able to hit on everything in this chapter. But certainly a lot of powerful lessons from Daniel. I believe Daniel becomes more and more applicable for us as the days go on. As really, Daniel finds himself in a country that is not really aligned with the values of God. And we see in chapter 1 that Daniel and his friends are challenged, as they're really challenged by the Babylonian education system, as they're trying to really assimilate them to Babylonian culture and trying to get them to leave their God and their beliefs behind. And as we go through those first 6 chapters of Daniel, we really have a historical account of the events that Daniel and his friends go through. And we're probably familiar with a lot of these stories, and we tried to hit on a few of the things that we see within the book of Daniel. In chapter 1, we see Daniel and his friends challenged. In chapter 2, I want to talk about a little bit this evening, but we're probably familiar with the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar has of a big statue. And this statue is made of different metals. We have gold, silver, bronze, and we have iron, and we have a mixture of clay at the feet, and we have a stone that comes and knocks down that statue. And I've actually preached on that in the past. I know that sometimes we forget about certain things, but I think that is sometimes a story that is brought up many times. King Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue, and the statue made of different metals representing different kingdoms. We remember Daniel chapter 3, where there's a statue that is made, and the friends of Daniel are asked to bow down to the statue. Daniel chapter 4 we look at as King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream of a tree being cut down, and Daniel tells him that tree is you. Because of your pride, because of you getting lost in your prosperity, you will have a period of time where you will basically go crazy and live with animals. And he returns very humble, and he actually promotes Daniel and his friends. In chapter 5, there's a feast. In chapter 6, they make a law against prayer in the land, particularly against Daniel in particular. Daniel is a very powerful book. The first 6 chapters are really historical. Once we get past chapter 6 into chapter 7, Daniel has a series of visions. And I remember having a discussion about chapter 7 with an individual back in high school, and it had some interesting terms. You know, when it comes to the Bible, when it comes to prophecy, and it comes to visions, we do need to understand that the Bible does use figurative language. And we do find figurative language in chapter 7. We have some visions. We've got some flashy images. And certainly, we see this with prophecy as well. But what we have to do is, whenever we come across a vision of prophecy, we really have to work through this and try to understand what are the symbols and what do they represent. And we really do have to take our time, and we really have to harmonize the scriptures. I found it interesting that when people want to study their Bible, they immediately jump to the visions and they jump to the prophecy, but they don't jump to the basics. There's a lot of people that will jump to the visions, jump to the prophecy, and say, I want to study Revelation. Well, I'm not against studying Revelation. But you know how much you have to understand to really understand Revelation? You better know your Old Testament very well. You better know your New Testament very well to really understand those prophecies and those visions which we see. But it's interesting, that's where people want to go first. We want to take a look at chapter 7. Daniel has a vision. I actually think this vision parallels, in my opinion, with chapter 2. So I think it'd be good for us to review chapter 2. If you look at Daniel chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And this dream is of a statue. And he has this dream, and he says, I want somebody to tell me what the dream is before you tell me what the dream's about. This king was no slouch. You know, he says, tell me what the dream is first, and then tell me the interpretation. Of course, nobody could do this in the land except for Daniel. And Daniel tells the king his dream and tells him the interpretation. If you're in chapter 2, starting in verse 36, what we see is a description of a statue. And this statue is broken into four parts, if you think of my body. The head is of gold. And then you start working down the body, and we have really silver, I believe bronze, and then we have iron. And we have this statue made of these different materials. And Daniel says to King Nebuchadnezzar, this statue, each of these materials represents a kingdom, a great empire, if you will. He says, the gold, King Nebuchadnezzar, is Babylon. That's the kingdom you're part of. You are the head of gold. And then we start going down and we see the series of kingdoms. And I believe these kingdoms to be the Medo-Persians that came after the Babylonians, then the Greeks that came after them, and then the Romans. And as the dream unfolds, Daniel said a stone is going to come. And a stone is going to hit this statue. And this statue is going to fall down. And this, as it is discussed in verse 45, it says, inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it broke in pieces the iron and the bronze and the clay and the silver and the gold, the great God has made known to the kings what will come to pass, and the dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. We see as this unfolds, this stone that is coming is going to be God's kingdom. And it is going to be a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And you think about that, a statue. We've got the Babylonians, the Medo-Persians, we've got the Greeks, and we've got the Romans. And they say in the time of the Romans, or in the time of that fourth kingdom, a kingdom is going to come that will never be destroyed. You know, the Bible's a lot about the kingdom. And there is probably more misunderstandings about the kingdom than many other biblical ideas. Daniel, in Daniel chapter 2, says that there is a kingdom coming. It'll be after the Babylonians, it'll be after the Medo-Persians, it will be after the Greeks, it will be during the time of the fourth kingdom, the Romans, and this kingdom will never be destroyed. You know, the Bible's a lot about the kingdom. In fact, in the Old Testament, they're waiting on the kingdom. They're waiting on the kingdom. And we see this when the New Testament starts. What does John the Baptist say when he comes on the scene? He says, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. You know what Jesus preaches? He preaches the same thing. The kingdom is at hand. You know that a kingdom is going to come. Has come. It has come. See, there's a lot of people that talk about a kingdom that's going to be 1,000 years, and they talk about these things. There's a kingdom that came in the time of the Romans that would never be destroyed. I believe that to be the church. We have chapter 2, but as I read chapter 7, I believe chapter 7, in my view, aligns with chapter 2. You know, if you think about Pharaoh and Joseph, as we go back in time, Pharaoh, when he had a dream about the famine that was going to come to Egypt, you remember that there was actually two dreams. There were two dreams that Pharaoh had, and when Pharaoh asked Joseph, why did I have two dreams about the famine? Joseph answered, because it's certain. I think perhaps that's what we have going on here in Daniel. In Daniel chapter 2, we've heard about a kingdom that will never be destroyed. In Daniel chapter 7, we're going to also hear about a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And I think we just have different symbols. Let's try to dig into Daniel chapter 7 with the time that we have remaining and see what is described. The first thing we're going to see is a vision which Daniel has, and we're going to see four beasts, which I tried to picture. Sometimes pictures are just better than words. The first seven verses we really see are these beasts. It says, now in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main fact. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Four beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. So Daniel's having a vision. The Bible tells you it's a vision. We're going to have figurative language here. We have to figure out what these symbols are, what these are representations of. we have a lion with eagle's wings. He says, I watched till the wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Verse 5, it says, suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear, it raised up on one side and 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said, thus it arise, devour much flesh. So we have a bear. Number 3, it says, after I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which was on its back 4 wings of a bird, a beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. So now we have a leopard, and it's got this the wings here. Then, verse 7, it says, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful, terrible, exceeding, dreadful, terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking into pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. It was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, but from before whom the 3 of the first horns were plucked out by the root. And there is this horn where eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth speaking great words. So Daniel has this vision. And a lot of times people start seeing these pictures, and they will come up with all kinds of elaboration, all kinds of stories, and we just need to make sure that we're trying to put the Bible together, piece it together, harmonize it. Daniel has a vision. What does he see? He sees 4 beasts. And I would note that these beasts do not come out at the same time. They come out consecutively. We have the 1st beast, then we have the 2nd beast, then we have the 3rd beast, then we have the 4th beast. When it comes to visions, when it comes to prophecy, study is needed. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, be diligent to present yourselves approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. It takes time to try to understand these things, to try to understand the representations and try to make the connections needed. It takes study. It takes time. And there are a lot of people, unfortunately, that will twist the scriptures to make it what they want to be. In 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 16, it says, as also in all his epistles, speaking in them of some things in which some are hard to understand, which untaught and unstable people twist their own destruction. It's easy sometimes to take the prophecies and the visions of the Bible and twist them to our own destruction. We must be very careful and very mindful. But I think to interpret visions and prophecies, you just have to have so much Bible knowledge. I mean, a lot of people would leave Daniel chapter 7 all alone, and they wouldn't try to make the connection to Daniel chapter 2, which we just had a few chapters before. A lot of people would take Daniel chapter 7 and isolate it from the New Testament passages that talk about the kingdom, because it's going to talk about the kingdom. But we have the pictures of these beasts. And in my personal opinion, I believe these beasts actually line up with the statue in chapter 2. The statue in chapter 2 had 4 main sections. It had the head of gold. It had those shoulders and chest. It had the thighs and legs, and then it kind of had the feet there. And it's divided into 4 sections. We have Babylon, the Medo-Persian, we have the Greek, and we have the Roman. I actually think that's what we're dealing with here. I believe that the lion is a representation of Babylon. I think the bear is a representation of the Medo-Persian. I believe that our 3rd, the leopard, is a representation of the Greek. And I believe our 4th, this terrible creature that the Bible describes, I believe it to be the Roman. Now, Daniel is going to try to give somewhat of interpretation, but actually Daniel is going to leave this vision with a hard time. Daniel is disturbed by the things that he sees, and he doesn't fully understand them. But as we have the Old Testament and New Testament, I believe we can start to piece things together. Look what comes into the vision next. What we're going to have come into the picture is really a kingly picture. Let's look at what comes into the picture next. We've got the 1st beast, the 2nd beast, the 3rd beast, the 4th beast, and we could break down these verses and talk about each individual thing and try to make light of each thing, but we're just simply not going to have time this evening. So let's look at those next few verses. It says, I watched till thrones, verse 9, were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. So we kind of have this picture of a king, if you will. His garment was white as snow, and his hair, as the hair on his head, was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth and, from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. We certainly see the picture of someone else coming into the picture, and we certainly get pictures and imagery of someone that is powerful. And we're going to see what this powerful individual does. But I think as we start to see, as it unfolds, we're going to see a powerful king and a powerful kingdom that really is going to be able to face these beasts that have been described. Verse 11, it says, I watched then because of the sound of the great word which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season of time. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. I'm not saying it's not hard to work ourselves through these passages, these visions, these prophecies. But Son of Man is used in reference to Ezekiel, and it's also used in reference to Jesus Christ. If you look in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 31, this is Jesus speaking, and Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. This is Jesus in really reference to himself. Jesus is referenced as the Son of Man. Ezekiel is also referenced as the Son of Man, which Ezekiel is in this time period. But I believe we're talking about the Messiah. I believe we're talking about the coming King, the Lord of Lords. And we're talking about a kingdom that will never be destroyed. You know what? In chapter 2, those are the words that are used in chapter 2. In chapter 2, we have a statue. We've got the gold, and it works down the body. And then God says, through Daniel interpreting King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he says, the stone will come. And the stone will come and knock down the statue, and there will be a kingdom that will never be destroyed. In chapter 7, Daniel has a vision. The vision has four beasts in it. And we see the picture of this king coming that is going to slay these beasts, and there is going to be a kingdom that will be set up that will never be destroyed. Now, so many times in the religious world, when people start talking about the kingdom, they talk about a physical kingdom. And there are multiple problems with that. And I think it's very unfortunate, because I think actually what the Bible paints is a more beautiful picture. The picture is a spiritual kingdom created by Jesus Christ will be eternal, everlasting, and never be destroyed. And you know what? You can be part of it this day. It's more powerful than Babylon. It's more powerful than the Medo-Persian. It's more powerful than the Greeks. It's more powerful than the Romans. It's the kingdom of Jesus Christ, which he purchased with his own blood, that he set up. And it was no afterthought. So many times when people talk about the kingdom, they want to talk about a physical kingdom that will not last. And they want to talk about a physical kingdom when a spiritual kingdom that will never be destroyed fits the picture which the Bible describes. A lot of times, the physical kingdom that they talk about is almost an afterthought. They say Jesus came and Jesus wanted to set up a kingdom, but you know what? It just didn't work out for Jesus the way he wanted to. So Jesus had to set up the church temporarily, and Jesus will come back and he will set up a kingdom and reign for 1,000 years on earth. That doesn't sound like a kingdom that would never be destroyed. And I can tell you, when Jesus came, he accomplished everything that he intended to accomplish. There are many problems with the idea of a physical kingdom. We cannot touch on all of them this evening. One off to the side that I'll mention very quickly, in Jeremiah chapter 22, there's a king mentioned. A king that God is very disappointed with. the king has made some mistakes. And actually, in Jeremiah chapter 22, verses 24 through 30, God tells this king that no descendant of him will ever reign in the throne of Jerusalem. Long story short, because I don't have as much time as I would want, this king that's mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 22 is in the lineage of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1. Jesus is not going to come back and reign here on earth in Jerusalem in a physical kingdom. The kingdom Jesus set up was the church, an everlasting kingdom, a spiritual kingdom that will never be destroyed. And we see it in the Bible. Everyone is waiting on the kingdom. And John the Baptist says, the kingdom's in hand, the kingdom's in hand. Jesus comes and says, the kingdom's in hand, the kingdom's in hand. And after Acts chapter 2, the kingdom has come, and that's the church. And after that point, when the church is mentioned in the Bible, it's mentioned as something that has already come. In Colossians chapter 1, Jesus is already resurrected. He's already ascended to heaven. In Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13, the Bible says this: He has delivered us from the power of darkness and conveyed us into the kingdom of His Son. How can we be in the kingdom if the kingdom has not come yet? Well, the answer is the kingdom has come. It was set up on the day of Pentecost. Actually, I think Isaiah chapter 2 talks about the kingdom, the church. Daniel chapter 2, Joel chapter 2, Isaiah chapter 2. I don't know if you can remember that. Isaiah chapter 2, Joel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 2. They're all talking about a kingdom that's going to come, and it happened in Acts chapter 2. A kingdom that will never be destroyed. There's so many problems with the idea of a physical kingdom, a physical reign on this earth. We think about things that Jesus said. Jesus said in Mark chapter 9 and verse 1, it says, And he said to them, Assuredly I say to you, that there are some standing here that will not taste death till they see the kingdom of God present with power. So Jesus walking around, Jesus saying the kingdom's in hand. John the Baptist is saying the kingdom's in hand. Jesus says, Some of you, before you taste death, will see the kingdom come in power. He was talking about the church. And the church is a beautiful thing. It's a powerful thing. In fact, in John chapter 18 and verse 36, even the apostles, I think, had a little misconception of this kingdom that was coming. It didn't really meet their expectations. And that's John chapter 18 and verse 36, it says, Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from here. You know, I don't know, sometimes, many of our religious friends and neighbors, it's not that I don't want to study with them, I certainly do. It's what I plead for, but there is more misunderstandings about the kingdom than so many other things in the Bible. The kingdom has come. The kingdom is now. You can be added to the kingdom. You can be delivered from the power of darkness and conveyed into the kingdom that the Bible talks about. The kingdom was not a mistake. Daniel was talking about it in Daniel chapter 2, and I believe the vision in chapter 7 is also talking about the kingdom. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 7. We have these four beasts, but someone is going to come and going to slay these beasts. Seems similar to the rock that's going to destroy the statue. The rock is going to destroy the statue, and there's going to be a kingdom that will never be destroyed. It seems like the Ancient of Days is going to come and is going to set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. Let's look at 15 through 28. We've got to see these creatures that have come. We've got to see the Son of Man. We see this picture in verses 7 through 14. Let's look at 15 through 28, because I think we're going to see a kingdom that will never be destroyed. It says, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, which devoured, broke into pieces, and trampled into residue with its feet, and the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely the horn which had eyes and a mouth, which spoke great words, whose appearance was greater than its fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints. Now I believe that this is the fourth beast, and this fourth beast is the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire persecuted the church. In fact, we don't have to have a big history lesson, but we see how much the Roman Empire actually persecuted the church. And actually, as the church developed, we see that Christians were even put into Colosseums. And we can talk about the things that Nero did, and so many of the things that the church had to endure because of the Roman Empire. It says the ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue all three kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall attend to change times and law, and the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. You know, it's hard in such a short time to try to go through a chapter, and certainly there's so much more to be said. Visions are hard and they're challenging. We have to study, we have to look, and certainly I could be wrong on certain things, but chapter 2 seems to match up with chapter 7. It's talking about a kingdom that will never be destroyed. I believe that kingdom to be the church of Christ, the church of the Bible, which Jesus shed his blood and really purchased and became the founder of that kingdom, an everlasting kingdom, a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And I think throughout history, that kingdom has always been on earth. I really believe that. You know, I'm not saying that we can make a perfect timeline of the Lord's church all the way back to Acts chapter 2. I know Acts chapter 2, the church was there, and I know throughout time we can certainly see the church. If you've got the seed, you can have the church. You can have the kingdom of God, the kingdom which you purchased for, the most powerful kingdom there's ever been and ever will be, and it will never be destroyed. Earthly kingdoms come and go, but the kingdom of our Lord will be around forever. You can be added to that kingdom. You can be added to the church. We see in Acts chapter 2, fulfilling Joel chapter 2, fulfilling Isaiah chapter 2, fulfilling Daniel chapter 2. In Acts chapter 2, we see the day of Pentecost, and Peter preaches a message, and he tells them to be baptized for the remission of sins, and we see that they're added to the church. They're added to the kingdom. You can be added to the kingdom this evening. Perhaps you need the prayers of the church. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian. We'd love to help you in any way that we can. If you come, if we stand, as we stand.